and Knox talked about their arsenals. You saw what I saw, right? He'll kill us as soon as he thinks he's safe. No, man, look, he's had a change of heart. You're crazier than him if you think that, BT said. Not really sure what to do here. If we somehow get by this horde, we'll have to deal with his whole army. He actually might think of letting us go now, but the moment he realizes he can have it all, there definitely isn't a voice of reason that's going to rein him in, I said. If you two Sallys are done with your little bromance, wouldn't mind having you over here so we can discuss this, Sanders said. Sallys? Oh, how I missed the Marines and their political correctness, I said. Did he just call us women? BT asked. The Marines somehow feel it is a negative motivator to call you a woman. Now, the misogynistic person might believe that this is because women are perceived as inferior, so the Marines in question need to step up their game. But you and I both know who holds the real power. I'll take it as a compliment to be called a Sally. You would, Sanders said. Should I repeat your stance to some other people, I asked, referring to his wife. No, we'll just let this be between us, he replied. As far as our problem right now, I see that we have two options. We bluntly try to force our way through, which even with Knox's substantial armament is destined for failure. Or we have the approaching men create a massive distraction that will draw enough zombies away that our force here will be able to weave through the opening. I'm all for the diversion. I'm just not sure it'll do much. Sure, it will create a shift, but these numbers, they'll never all go for it. They're smart and getting smarter. They'll send what they need to deal with the attack. But they've set up shop around us for a reason. They won't so easily yield their position. You're giving a mighty amount of credit to the debtors, Sanders said, clearly not giving any stock to my concerns. Well, near as I can tell, they have encamped a huge horde around the entire town, effectively trapping us. They're not moving off or through. Seems pretty intelligent to me, I said. Yeah, it does, BT echoed. What about burning them? Burning them all? I could see the licks of flames in Knox's eyes as he said this. Not a good idea, BT piped in. It's been tried. They don't disperse, but rather converge. This entire town would be a forest of flames in a couple of hours. Knox still looked like this was an acceptable outcome. We'd be in the blaze zone, I said, trying to get him back. Is that like being in the danger zone? BT asked. You did not just pull out a Kenny Loggins reference. Listen, I realize you're happy that some of our people are free, but really, man? I asked. Fuck you, Talbot. There's the surly beast I know. And love, he added. You're supposed to say, and love. Am I? Dick, Sally, you too, Sanders shouted. We're in some serious trouble here. Could really use you shit bricks in this conversation. Shit brick? BT asked. It's a Marine Corps thing. Pretty much believes we're incompetent, I explained. Well, he is, BT said. And you wonder why I didn't add the last part to my statement? I'm sorry, I said to Sanders. It looked like he wanted to punch me in the head. It's how I deal with adversity. I would imagine it's going to get worse before it gets better. You don't think if I had my men get some trucks that they'd be able to force their way through, Knox asked. A few tanks, those huge mining trucks, maybe. I don't think a semi or dump truck could do it, even fitted with a plow. It would bog down. I'd had enough experience with trucks to know they could crush through a few cars, but not a sea of the inhumanity. We might be able to find a tank or two. There are National Guard posts all along the coast, Knox said. We'll take longer, though. For some reason, the zombies aren't moving. I'm in favor of tanks, I said. Plus, it will give us some time to look for our missing people. I was keeping an eye on Knox to see if he gave away a tell that he might be lying about their whereabouts. If he was holding them, I saw nothing that made me believe that was the case. I wish it was just trip, BT said. I'd be more inclined to leave him here. Knox was warring within himself like he'd just remembered we were the enemy and he wanted us dead. I don't think I like you running around all that much, he said. You have the device. You can monitor where we go. I still need to get those of us here on board. And you're forgetting. "We're hoping you can get us out of here," I told him, letting him believe he was the absolute power in this equation. And he would be, at least right up until I leaked his twisted brains all over the ground. I had to. There was no way I would be able to sleep at night knowing I'd stepped aside and let him bring his own version of what the world should be like to any unsuspecting souls. I let the thought linger of grabbing a pistol from Sanders and killing Knox, or maybe giving a nod to the sniper to do so. I could hope the house of cards he had built would come crashing down if the crazy glue was gone, but really, we were going to need him, or at least his leadership, to get out of here. Maybe that's selfish. I was putting the lives of those with me and myself over the lives of countless, nameless others. But shouldn't I be? "Holy fuck," I said aloud, shaking my head, trying to erase that line of logic. "You all right, man?" BT asked. I think I had a mind convergence with Deneau for a second. I got the look. You'd think BT would be used to me by now. "Could you show me where you saw that car?" I asked. He did so. It was so friggin' weird, him being helpful. Like maybe his rabies was in remission, if such a thing were possible. "Remember, when this is all over, you said you were keeping Deneau," I told Knox as I headed to go downstairs. "You want to take this?" He handed me a radio. "I'll let you know when my men are in position or if anything changes. Don't make me regret that I reached across the river. I can still drown you. I'll keep that in mind." And then I went down. Still a bunch of murderous intent staring at me. Maybe their boss was cool with it, but these guys had suffered the loss of friends and family at our hands. They would want payback. The thing about Knox was he was a sociopath, on top of the dozen other ailments he possessed, and for the most part he could not bond with another, so felt no great loss when he lost one. Right now, that was working to our advantage, as long as he kept the rest of his goons in line. "Winters still has a shot," Sanders said to me as we cleared the entrance. "It's like he's daring us to," BT said. "Make the call, Talbot." "No, he could be lying about where Tripp and the others are. Maybe Knox's world domination plans are knocked loose when he goes, but those men back there want us dead, and the only thing holding them back is the crazy man. And if that isn't bad enough, we're dealing with a small city's worth of zombies that have decided to play ring around the Rosie. We need him, if you can believe that." Chapter 8. Mike, Journal Entry 8. "Are you guys all right?" I was so happy to see them, I was nearly reduced to tears. Relief flooded through me at seeing them all. I gave each one of them a hug and was reassured that Knox had, for the most part, been a decent captor. This guy made about as much sense as those people that used to go on the Jerry Springer show. Like, literally, I once saw an episode where they had a woman that confessed to eating 4 rolls of toilet paper a week. A lot of fiber, I'm supposing, but, well, you get it. BT gave my sister a hug that I thought was going to swallow her up completely. Definitely weird from my perspective. Not many times that a best friend dating a sister works out too well, but these times were all about unprecedented precedents. "What are you doing?" my sister asked him quietly. "Don't worry, I told him," BT said. "Wait till I tell Mom you're dating a giant. You know how she feels about interspecies romance," I told her. My sister flipped me off, but she looked happy enough. Jesse, on the other hand, looked like he might have swallowed a whole lemon. "Talbot, our safe house is right smack dab in the middle of that zombie ring, and I can't pick my wife up on the radio. That can be good and bad news," Sanders said. "I'm listening. I know my wife. She saw those zombies coming a mile away, and they're all in the bunker." "The bad?" I prodded. It was Biddeford that was looking a little sheepish. "I was working on the receiver in the bunker. One of the boards went down, and I didn't finish fixing it." "Don't they have one of these?" I asked, holding up the handheld. "I'm sure. It just won't penetrate the concrete," Winters finished. "They'll be fine inside," Sanders said. "Plenty of air, water, and food, but no comms. I don't know how we can possibly get to them." "We don't. We just leave them there," I said. "There are easier ways to get a divorce," Gary said. "Funny. No, the zombies are here for someone in the city. Don't know who, but once we all leave, we wait until they vacate and then double back, Guy said. And if they don't move, Sanders asked. You're a Marine, don't overthink it, I told him. Right now, we need to use the time afforded to us to finding Trip and the rest. Knox is either going to rethink his position or the zombies are. Either way, it's bad news for us. We made it to the crash zone just as a soft breeze picked up, bringing with it all manner of ill tidings. Maybe ill smellings is a better way to describe it. The inside of the car was indeed bathed in a fair amount of dried red liquid. But it was not blood. Hot sauce, I said, dipping a finger into it and smelling it before wiping it away on a seat. You hear that? Winters had his head cocked to the side. I watched as others began to swivel around, looking. Fucking concerts, I said. I, as of yet, had not picked up the sound. Choppers, Sanders said. Military. CH-47F, Chinook. It was a familiar voice directly behind me. His breath smelled suspiciously like weed and cheese. Not a pleasant combination. Trip! I turned quickly. Are you all right? Paunch! What are you doing at the state fair? I didn't have to ask if everyone else was fine, as they were all walking toward us. My relief was palpable. Stephanie had Zach in her arms, with Tiffany, Porkchop, Stye, Melissa, and Mark following closely. By now we could see the machines as they flew past us on our left, heading to where Knox was. What the hell? I may have asked it, but everyone was thinking it. Two of the three choppers had landed. We could no longer see them. He's offering cover, Sanders said as we watched. What is going on? Some part of me knew, though I didn't want to believe it. Looks like our new ally found a ride out of here, son of a bitch, Sanders said. He had those in his pocket the entire time. So why the spectacle, then? BT asked. I mean, I'm glad we got our people back, but why would he bother? Because he's a sick fuck, and he's going to watch all of us get buried together with his eye in the sky, I said. At least we know the SAT schedule now, BT said, pulling a watch from his pocket. I wanted to ask him why he had a watch, like, what was he going to be late for? But in this particular case, it worked out. Great, we can make sure we know when to flip him off, I said. And you know what? Every fucking hour we knew that thing was overhead and I was available to, I did just that. And I would do so until I no longer could. The choppers made sure to steer clear of us, flying even farther away from us on their return journey. We could see them hovering where we figured the ring was, and could just barely see something being dropped. At first we couldn't tell what. In another hour, we realized he was bombing the horde with Molotov cocktails, whipping them up into a burning frenzy. He was not going to leave anything to Providence. It made no sense. Why not kill the hostages? Why not kill me after all this hunting and tormenting when I was right there in his clutches? Unless you're insane yourself, it is impossible to understand the inner workings of a madman, so maybe there was hope for me yet because Knox had me completely befuddled. He'd left us alive, but we were defeated, and we'd yet to fire a shot. We went back to one of the safe houses, unsure as to what we should do next. We were surrounded by enemies with vastly superior numbers, both live and undead, and out of the reach of our loved ones. And to top it off, we did somehow pull an orangutan out of our ass and make it. Knox was still watching, and he had visual and battle control of the sky. He could be upon us at any point that suited him. So much for living the dream of a zombie apocalypse in the comfort of my den, making love to my wife, eating fresh game, and catching up on all the reading I would ever want to do. I had my elbows on the kitchen table and had my palms pressed against my eyes as I held up my head, which was getting exceedingly heavy as I weighed the few options we still had left to us. Biddeford was upstairs, keeping a lookout, when he shouted he had spotted a fire. Sanders and BT joined me as I went up. Thick, black, roiling smoke was billowing into the sky, 3 miles distant at the most. Safe to say what Knox was dropping out of the helicopters. It was BT that caught on first. Hey, it could be worse, he said when he saw my face. Yeah, how's that, I asked. He could have given us Deneau back. I let out a small laugh. He was right. It could always be worse. You think she'll ever get what she deserves, he asked. Can only die once, so I'm going to say no. Then I thought about it. Maybe she could get her just desserts. There have been very few instances in life when I have even thought about hitting a woman, and all of them revolved around self-defense. But I'll tell you what, I said, I would gleefully haul off and punch her square in that cigarette-clad mouth. Maybe she'll choke on all that tobacco, or better yet, the lit cherry would burn all that dry, crinkly mess that she is inside. They were staring at me, open-mouthed, now. So I followed through. Or, possibly, I would have enough of an upward angle to my punch that I shattered the cartilage in her nose and pierced her fucking brain, making her an instant vegetable so that I would be able to get in a few more savage licks before she collapsed to the ground, and even then I might tie her corpse to a tree so I could use it as a punching bag for a few weeks. I mean, at least until the stink really started to settle in. Then, at the very end, maybe fill her bloated carcass up with a few pounds of tannerite and blow what remained of her all over a cow pasture. I take it you're angry with her, Sanders said. I feel like you've given this too much thought, BT said. Yeah? Look at me with a straight face and tell me you weren't thinking the same thing now that I've spelled it out. No offense, man, but if I punched her, it would be a one and done. I'm thinking I'd rather twist her up like a pretzel. The satisfaction of hearing her bones snap would be beyond reproach. He was wringing his hands as he said this, but I wouldn't spend a lot of time on her corpse. All right, so we've decided we want this old bat dead, but that isn't our immediate problem, Sanders said. If everyone's favorite psychopath did indeed set the zombies ablaze and they are now running around like flaming chickens without heads, this town could be swept up in a wildfire, and us with it. We nodded, grudgingly. Now, that being said, maybe they are dispersing. That merits us taking a look. You're right about that, Sanders. Taking a look is as good an idea as any, but things could spiral pretty fast. We'd need to move as a group, I said. I could see the Marine and Sanders having a tough time with this new equation, and I got that. Things worked a whole lot easier with able-bodied men and women not only willing to fight, but trained to do so very effectively and cohesively. We had a bunch of kids, assorted others, and Trip. If we left here to check, then got overrun and had to make a mad dash to safety, who was here to defend the homestead, so to speak? Every time we split up, our chances of getting everyone back together in one place got smaller. The other side of this coin was also a blast to think about. What if we had to move fast? And we couldn't. Pogo sticks, Trip shouted. Man, we could just jump over their heads. Went to a dead show back in the 70s. This guy must have been 11 feet tall in front of me. Maybe it was a big hat. But I had a pogo stick, and I just kept jumping up over him so I could see the show. That was until I realized he was behind me. He started scratching his head. Stephanie grabbed his hand and pulled him away. I heard her saying something about coming with her so that the grown-ups could talk. I watched as Sanders wrestled with his thought. He dragged a hand across his face, something I had done a lot of since the Z-Pock, surprised I hadn't worn my nose off this way. Are there any other bunkers we could lie low in? I asked. Something fireproof. There are, but we usually only put enough supplies in them for a few days and for many fewer people. Not really prepared for anything of this magnitude. We get stuck in there for more than a couple of days, we could be in a world of hurt. Could be a last resort, Sanders said. Mr. T, what about putting all the kids in there? Tommy asked. We'd have to leave Stephanie with Trip to keep him from eating everything in the first hour. 5 days max with rationed water. Shitty living conditions. You're talking about that many people basically living in a shoebox. Gonna have a hard time being able to lie down comfortably, he said. Beats being dead, BT said. I nodded in agreement. You're not gonna believe this shit, Biddeford said from atop a telephone pole. Sanders had explained that they had put footholds in a bunch of them so they could survey from a high point if necessary. This was one of those. Biddeford was there with a pair of binoculars, seeing something he was having a hard time relating, judging by the shaking of his head. "You realize, Corporal, we can't see what you can, right?" Sanders asked, looking up, shielding his eyes from the sun. "Sorry, sir. The zombies, the burning zombies, they're heading by droves into Miller's Pond." "That solves one problem," I said, and added 100 more, I thought. We quickly made our way into a bunker house, which was more of a safe room. Well, safe closet is more an apt description. "Gonna have to split them up, Talbot. You can't put everyone in here," Sanders told me as an aside. "There's another bigger bunker up ahead. It'll fit the rest." "How far?" "Little under a mile," he replied. It didn't sound far, but in hostile territory it could take us an hour or more to safely traverse that span, and I didn't trust Tripp not to double that. Add to that, Zack looked sick. He needed rests and whatever nutrition there was. "Tripp, you cool with staying here?" I asked. "Keep an eye out on some of the kids?" "You're a good dude, Ponch. You're doing the best you can," he said. "Thanks, man," I told him. "We'll be all right," Stephanie replied. I did not like the look in Tripp's eyes as we closed the door to the room. He looked very much like he knew something about this, but had been doing his best to keep that truth even from himself. I had to let that nagging feeling go. It could just as well have been that he had some murderous gas built up in him and was fearful of what it would do to those poor souls locked up with him. We had most of those that needed safekeeping safely placed. Now we just needed to get the rest to shelter. To get them there was myself, B.T., Tiffany, Sanders, Winters, Biddeford, Gary, Travis, Tommy, Meredith, and my sister. 11 skilled shooters against 100,000 zombies. It sounded fair. The idea was to stay off to the side of the fire, hoping for a clear avenue through. If we found a way out, we'd circle back around once, hopefully, we had pulled enough zombies away, or they'd lost interest in following. We'd gone a mile, no more, when we saw our first zombies. There were 7 of them, and they were on patrol. Couldn't really call it anything else but that. They were actively looking for something or someone. Their heads were on a constant swivel. We watched them pass on the street through knotholes in a privacy fence. I wasn't thrilled that they appeared to be heading the same way we had come. When they stopped 50 feet past us, I was thinking that maybe they had caught wind of us. Then they showed just how serious they were when one of them did their version of flushing the prey out with that mind-fucking screeching sound. I gritted my teeth in pain as I kept that particular one in my sights. Him I wanted to kill personally. At that point, the 6 would have been easy enough to deal with, but this was a patrol. The vanguard. The main force was still waiting to get in on the action. We did almost nothing as we waited for them to be out of range. Came across 3 similar patrols, though luckily none had a screecher with them. Whatever aberration these fucknuts must be, they were in short supply. We were being so cautious, I think Henry could have kept this pace up. By the time we got to the inner edges of the horde, night was fast approaching. We were creeping around houses like thieves looking for an easy target when the nightmare began. As if they were on cue, the zombies started moving as one cohesive unit. I'm sure if we had an aerial view, it would look something like those schools of fish or birds that all turn on a dime in unison, just change directions all at once and swoop in. I'd not known that people, I guess you could call them people, moving could be so loud. If we dared to talk, we would have had to speak like we were in a concert pit to get a message across, even though the zombies were still quite a ways away. With that many pressing to maneuver down constricted avenues, they were going through fences, tearing down covered parking spots, beams on porches and decks. The press of them alone was shifting houses on their foundations, and as far as I could tell, there weren't any bulkers, at least not on the front lines. It was like a herd of buffalo that decided to shift from the plains straight through Dodge. "We're in a little bit of fuckery," Sanders said. That was obvious enough. Then it really dawned on me why we were in the fuckery. We had wandered directly into Tornado Alley, or for those of you unfamiliar with the term, straight into a mobile home community. A location where seemingly every natural disaster known to man ultimately befalls. Why is that? Does nature possess some vulnerability awareness? Does wind and water seek out places where it can cause the most catastrophic and graphic videos to be played out on the news? Maybe nature has a flair for the dramatic. It wants us all to know abundantly who is in fucking charge. No one can look away when the home goes twisting into the air or sliding down the side of a mountain, or as it collapses under the weight of a 4-foot snowfall. You should have to sign a disclosure when you buy one of those death traps, those hurricane flood beacons. Sign here that you realize at some point in your residence, your lovely double-wide with the built-on porch will end up washing down the Mississippi, even if you live in Oregon. It's just a foregone conclusion. I actually shook my head as Sanders ripped through the lock and started ushering us inside the doomed aluminum Twinkie. "This is about as good an idea as landing the Hindenburg on the Titanic," I said as I walked up the flimsy 2-step steel stairway with the rickety railing. "Sure, you're not going to die if you fall a foot and a half, but it doesn't bode well for the rest of the construction if the steps up swayed like a funhouse attraction." The thin aluminum walls of the single wide did little to muffle the march of the damned. Then there was nothing. They'd once again acted in unison. They came to a full stop. I could not help thinking they were merely tightening the noose they had secured firmly around our necks. "Mike, do we make a run for it?" Gary asked. "Stuck now, brother. Good chance they'll see us, and even if we make it away from this group, we'd have a decent chance of running into one of their patrols." Gary pressed the kitchen wall, and we all heard the small pop as it gave under the minimal pressure he had exerted. BT groaned, sort of wishing we were in a high-rise right now. Personally, that didn't sound much better, especially if the zombies were inside the building. There were only so many ways out that didn't involve plummeting to your death. Fighting in a stairwell while standard in survival tales is not a fun proposition, usually not factored in as the echoing percussion of shots fired. It was murder on the eardrums and thus the equilibrium, which, I learned, have some causal linkage to each other. Then there's the ricochet. If you're not shot directly, or by accident, or devoured by your enemies, you still emerge deaf and disoriented. "Why'd they stop?" Biddeford asked. It was a question we were all wondering. I had to remember he was a young kid and a Marine. He was used to his superiors telling him what was going on. So when Sanders did not respond, he turned to Winters, then really each of us in turn. But everyone either shook their heads or shrugged at him. How could any of us truly know what the hell zombies were thinking? It was definitely tactical, whatever it was. These weren't just brainless brain-eaters. Nope. Not these fucks. Our particular kind were apparently well-versed in the art of war. I jumped when I heard the splintering of wood. Now, I think everyone did, but I had gone to the back bedroom to peek out a small window to make sure we didn't have any company sneaking up on us while all else was quiet. Ignorance is bliss, they say, and I would have been much happier had I not witnessed 2 bulkers blowing completely through a storage shed. Books, dolls, old toys, brewing equipment, along with sheet metal, tools, and wood, exploded up into the air as if a detonation had occurred. I'd initially not seen the 2 bodies. They'd been wrapped in blankets. Not sure if it had been a murderer hiding his victims or a couple of innocents that had found an easy way out, hidden among their treasures, not wanting to deal with the difficulties this world presented. Whatever they had once been, they were long dead, and the ripeness must have attracted some attention. They may have been rotting, but that did not prevent the zombies from descending on them. I didn't like watching people eating popcorn. There was no way I was hanging around to watch zombies rip through putrid people meat. I'd seen enough humans eaten that I would never need to refresh that visual. I could basically pull up the rolling reel in my head whenever I needed to lose a few hours of sleep. "Bulkers," I said, as I came back into the main living room. "They'll cut right through this tin can," BT said. I'm thinking he immediately regretted saying the words aloud. "You've been hanging with Justin a little too much?" I asked him, quietly trying to lighten a pretty tense situation. For those who may have stumbled onto my later journals, my son has a proclivity for stating the obvious and was very early on nicknamed Captain Obvious, which he thoroughly dislikes. "Running sounds pretty good now," Gary said, once again popping the kitchen wall as he stood away from it. "Stop that," I told him after the third time. It wasn't long afterward. I would imagine the time it took to eat a couple of corpses, for the zombies to start their march again. Was this their new tactic? Surround an entire community and flush out the prizes? Wring the final drops of humanity from the fabric of life? It was safe to assume that some people had just stayed put where they had lived, that they had eked out a quiet existence so far. The possibility that the zombies knew this and were capitalizing on it, well, that just sucked. How long would it be until they had sufficient numbers to encircle someplace the size of Boston or New York? There might still be thousands of people holed up in there. People were even more fucked if that was possible. How could we possibly counteract what they were doing? Even if we somehow pulled off a heroic stand like the Spartans against the Persians, we'd never kill enough of them to make a difference. They wouldn't lose the appetite to fight like the Persians had. They had nothing to lose, nothing to live for. They would just keep coming, keep eating. Their resolve was insurmountable, basically because they didn't have any. They did what they did because they just did it. Would the fucking aphids that invaded your garden give two shits if you killed a million of their brethren in an attempt to save your crop? Nope, not at all. They would keep coming, happily munching away at your corn, cabbage, and cucumbers. "More for us," their tiny brains would say. Individuals don't matter to them, only their continued survival as a group. The zombies had a sort of hive mentality. At least they were developing one. As of yet, I'm not even sure they understood the concept of survival. They were like a pill bug rolling down a mountain. It did what it did, and then it stopped and unrolled to eat. Zombies were approaching and exhibiting higher brain functions, and maybe someday they would wrestle with existential questions. Right now, though, all that mattered was for us not to become mobile home souffle. I'm terrified. I thought my sister was talking to me, but she was moving in closer to BT. This was seriously going to take some getting used to. The army was advancing, and their stench with them. It was not easing my trepidation about the robustness of the house with so much of the stink pouring in. We were all at the corners of windows trying to get the best view for the oncoming disaster. It's one thing to watch an accident or gawk at the aftermath, but waiting for it to hit you? Well, that just sucks. Can't tell you how many times I looked to the door and wondered if Gary might have had it right. Maybe we should have taken our chances running. Might as well have been in a beer can, and I'd seen enough brainless idiots crush a shitload of those on their foreheads to know what the Z's outside could do to this thing. They got in here. There was no upstairs, no basement crawl space, no roof we could climb to for safety. We were in a dinghy. They were the tsunami. Tiffany had sidled up next to me. When pain killed Pappy, I had a chance to leave it all. The rest of the world had left me to rot. But he picked me up and dusted me off, sent me on towards life. I owed him some revenge, though knowing him, he would have never thought that. I think he would have been happier, me just turning around, but I stayed the course. I followed that bitch and her sisters, she said. I wasn't entirely sure why she was telling me this. She'd recounted this story before, and right now, well, it didn't seem relevant. Until it was. I'm thankful you did follow. We would have been in a world of hurt had you not, I told her. Me too. And not only because I got to take that shot, but because I met all you folks. I never knew that I could care for so many people simultaneously. I never had a real family, and in my most vivid imagination, I would not have believed it could be this good. Yes, what we are going through is terrible. But I'm so glad I have you people to go through it with. even, she hitched, even if this is the end, I wanted to say thank you. You're welcome, kiddo, I told her. But this is far from the end. You gonna tell that guy it's over? I asked, pointing to BT. Or that guy? Or her? It's not over until it's over, and then you don't really give a shit. You'll be too busy adjusting your halo and getting fitted for your robe. She smiled, but she was scared. We all were. Could try to cover it under a thick veneer of bravado, but oh, what I wouldn't do for some Viking mushrooms right about now. A little parboiled fly agaric to make us go berserk might just be the antidote to what ailed us. Hell, it wasn't like I hadn't been dosed before during an attack. There's nothing wrong with accessing the secret door to your subconscious fight mechanism. After all, the flight part was pretty much on the surface. But we couldn't run from this. There had been some ambient light leaking into the small house from the moon and stars, but the zombies seemed preternatural at this exact moment. Or at least I credited them for the dramatic lighting that came from the horde. A thick fog was rolling in. It had at first been behind the horde, but had now completely enveloped them, and with it, half the house. It was getting darker by the second. It had been relatively easy to see each other's facial expressions. Now I could barely make out my own hand in front of my face. Anxiety was heightened as dark settled in. Fear of the dark is a basic, innate fear. Something we're born with. A legacy gift from our ancestors. When your eyes can't assure you of safety, your imagination panics, and with good reason. Scary things do run around in the night, things that don't come out in the light. Maybe in the 20th century we started to feel better about the dark, though the makers of nightlights would tell you differently. Of course, there is a big difference between being afraid of the nocturnal roaming of the real saber-toothed tiger and fearing the legendary boogeyman that somehow lurked under every child's bed, which would make him more prolific than Santa, because that fucker was in every room every night. Now, in the 21st century, we had a right and need to address and discredit that don't fear the dark adage. Now, what you couldn't see would definitely kill you and eat you. Turning on a light would not save us. It wasn't long after I waved my hand in front of my face and could no longer see it that we heard our first thump. There was a small squeal. I'd like to blame on Tiffany, but honestly, I think it was Gary. Shit, could have been me. This initial thump was followed by another, and then another, to the point it sounded like golf ball hail popping on a tin roof. It rolled in just like a storm, sprinkling, then raining. Then suddenly there was a shift, and it was a fucking torrent. We had been expectant, maybe nervous, but now fear became a tangible, palpable entity within that enclosure. Now we could not just choose to stay inside. We were trapped. And that fear wrapped its cold, callous, uncaring hands right around our hearts, minds, and throats. But this shift was more than psychological. The trailer home we were in had been sitting on a cement slab, maybe lifted by a few cinder blocks and some 6x6 pressure-treated lumber, but certainly not sufficiently anchored. The ass end of the house, which was facing the enemy, slid counterclockwise about a foot at first, then was forcibly broached until we were offering a broadside to the zombies flowing around us. We've all been to those concerts. You're standing peacefully in your little spot in the lawn seating when some asshat starts to dance and the field becomes a writhing, flinging, drug-induced clusterfuck and you are shoved right along with the fleet. More times than not, I was that asshat, and I sincerely apologize if you were caught up. Oh, how I wish we were a pirate ship of old and could have opened some cannon ports and sent some chained-together steel balls hurtling into that mass. Instead, we were more like the doomed Poseidon presenting ourselves a hull into the oncoming tidal surge. I could hear the rustle of the group moving from standing or kneeling positions to most likely sitting or prone. The house began to rock an inch or two at first, and then it became more violent as the press increased. Don't know what everyone was thinking, but there was no way we weren't pitching over. I started reaching around and tapping people. "Move to the far wall," I was whispering. "Cover your head." Seemed like common sense instructions because we were about to flip and be pelted by tumbling furniture, lamps, mirrors, decor, dishes, and plates. Something funny happens to common sense when you're terrified. It basically goes out the window. It crowds out higher function. All you want to do is run away from the thing. We were now basically one giant drunken conga line where the wall met the ceiling on the side away from the zombies. I had a boot in my face and a head on my calves. Did I ever mention I was claustrophobic? The feeling of being constricted had such a hold on me in normal life, I actually wore baggy clothes. A tight t-shirt could well up feelings of anxiety. How the fuck I made it in a womb for 9 months is something I don't even want to think about. I was warring within myself to just sit still. I needed to move, make more room. I'd once, okay, maybe a few times, punched the living shit out of opposing football players when I'd been at the bottom of a pile and they'd moved in what my mind I considered too slowly in getting the fuck up. Guys who knew me got off as fast as they could. The pressure, the difficulty to catch a breath, it was all panic-inducing. So besides the very real threat of zombies, I had to deal with my inner demons. Because of our location on the wall, the rollover itself had affected us minimally. Us humans moved maybe a foot total, and were relatively in control. It was the other stuff I was worried about, the flying housewares that inflicted the most damage. I almost blacked out as a cast-iron pan clipped the side of my skull. A kitchen chair leg pegged me in the ribcage. Glassware shattered all around us like glass hand grenades. There were outright cries and muffled screams as furniture hit the others. I could see nothing at all. But I imagine it looked like swirling stars in a cartoon maelstrom. Blood was free-flowing from my head, and I knew the others had not come through unscathed, as I could smell their iron-rich leakings. I wished I couldn't, but I could. The wall we were now calling a floor had suffered some serious structural damage from the fall. It had buckled along the entire length of it. The fog must have lifted somewhat, as there was now some light coming in the windows along what was now our ceiling. It allowed me to see a whole bunch of jagged edges where, when this thing flipped again, we would be flayed as if we were being keel-hauled. If you don't know what that lovely act of sea justice was, it was the practice of torture which involved a man being fastened to two ropes and dragged underneath a barnacle-encrusted ship bottom, then raised up the far side. It was very effective. If the sailor didn't drown, the action would usually induce severe injuries. Sometimes the loss of limbs would occur, or even decapitation. Odds were we wouldn't suffer those types of drastic bodily harm, but major blood vessels are frighteningly close to the surface. One could easily be severed on the aluminum shards that were sticking up like stalagmites, and while bleeding out might be better than being keel-hauled, dying was dying. We did not have time to pick our way through the obstacle course, as we were once again tossed over, now onto the roof, like I feared. The injuries were becoming more pronounced. I'd hoped what I heard was the snapping of some furniture, but it sounded suspiciously like bone. Plus, the blood loss was greater, and if I was smelling it, how long would it be until the zombies did as well? We were now a rolling brick. The roof suffered much more damage due to the weakening of the wall, so much so it collapsed in nearly a foot, causing many spontaneous screams. They likely feared being crushed like a scrapped Ford, but the odds of that were low. This thing would disintegrate long before that became a problem. I had a deep gash ripped open across my abdomen, and my ass, of all places, and that one hurt more than anything else I had suffered so far. By the time we rolled onto the third side, the initial wall just fell away. It was gone. We'd left it behind like the garbage it was. I think it was BT's head bouncing off mine that made me black out for a moment. When I opened my eyes a few seconds later, there were the moans and groans of those around me mixed with the sounds of thousands of zombies, though they were moving away from us. We'd somehow made it. Or so it seemed. I sat up, my head doing spirals and wanting to crash back down to a place where gravity wouldn't affect it. I fought against it, struggling to gain my bearings and sit up. There were those that needed help. I just wasn't sure if I was up to the task of giving any just yet. It was a good thing Ryan had passed out, because there was a good chance he'd be screaming like a banshee. His leg had somehow become entangled in a cabinet and had snapped his ankle, which was hanging at a grotesque angle compared to the rest of him. No one had come through unscathed, but he was the only one that had become lamed. "You all right?" I checked on Nicole and Wesley. How she'd kept him from crying out the entire time, I wasn't sure. Until I saw his binky. The power, or at least comfort, that can come from sucking on that little rubber device. That's the wonder of breasts, though. Even fake ones have the ability to calm us down. I realize women rule the world, even if it's mostly in the background. The only reason I can see for their not just taking over the world is because they know it sucks to be up front. Sorry for the double entendre. "Get them out of here," Sanders said to me. "Winters, Biddy, and myself will watch your withdrawal." "The boy's ankle. I should set it, sir," Biddeford said. "No time. We have to allow them time to get somewhere safer. You can do it then," the major replied. The zombies were about 100 feet away, closing their circle. On what, we did not know. Right now, we didn't have the resources to find out or challenge them outright. We had lost this position, and sooner rather than later. Ryan was going to wake up and realize he was in a fuckload of pain. Tommy hoisted the teenager up. I took Wesley from my daughter. She had a limp, said her hip was hurting. Gary looked a bit like any of Mike Tyson's opponents when he was in his prime, like he'd been banged in the head one too many times. Travis was up ahead a little bit, closer to the herd. If he was scared, he was doing an admirable job of hiding it. Meredith was helping her uncle walk a straight line. I had my head on a swivel, looking for threats. Stragglers, one of them to notice they'd passed the buffet table. Sanders and his men had not yet pulled back to our location. I was feeling we were mighty vulnerable, considering everyone was disoriented or broken, and we had only one person with the ability to fire effectively at the moment. "Travis, stay closer to us," I hush yelled. I know it sounds weird, but we've all done it. Maybe at a movie theater when your kid is misbehaving and you want him to realize he's in trouble without ruining the movie-going experience for everyone else, the most common hush whisper is, ironically, "Be quiet." We were a block over when automatic gunfire opened up. "Shit, we gotta move," I said. But sometimes you realize you could not have said more superfluous words if you said water was wet or sex was great. There really was no need to verbalize these things, as they were universal truths. Thankfully, no one said, "Duh." I cradled Wesley and then moved over to get a shoulder propped up under Gary. He was starting to shake off the effects of his most likely concussion-inducing headbang, but not fast enough. "Pick a house," I told Travis. This time there was no hush to it. Then what I'd hoped was the unthinkable. So unthinkable that it hadn't even occurred to me to do it, happened right in front of us. Travis brought his rifle up to his shoulder and began to fire. "I'm okay," Gary said. I don't think slurred speech after a head injury was a great sign, but I could only deal with one calamity at a time. Never been much of a multitasker. Walking wounded versus the walking dead. Perhaps we could start our own fight game franchise. The deaders were pouring out all around us. They must have been left behind by their faster brethren. They were ambling and shambling, and Travis was in danger of being cut off from the rest of us as he sought out something, anything, where we could once again seek shelter. I handed the baby back to Nicole and grabbed Gary's heavier hunting rifle. It was of the wooden stock, as opposed to my composite. We had a fair number of zombies locked onto us. It was my hope to not draw more, as I first made sure the rifle was on safe before I began to use the buttstock as my skull crusher. We've all, at one point or another, seen the movies and TV shows that depict crushing a skull as something not much more difficult than busting open an overripe melon, thus the term melon head. I can assure you that is not the case. These were not half-rotted people rising from shallow graves after having been worm-eaten for a decade. For the most part, these had been vibrant, healthy people with nice thick skulls before the virus took over. No matter what you believed, it was not something you could do with your hands. Even with a tool, it was a jarringly difficult business. Knowing this, I used all the force available to me as I drove that heavy wooden stock into the forehead of the zombie nearest me. It was enough power that I drove the top part of his head a good 3 or 4 inches back into his brain. The end of the rifle emerged coated in a gooey black mass of brain and skull bits. I had to step up to the next one, who seemed all too willing to accept his penance. His arms stretched out to meet me, though I was most definitely not his lord and savior. Or maybe I was the savior part. Who knew if any humanity remained in those human shells? Perhaps that small piece left was begging for a quick and merciful ending. There have been times when I'll admit I thought I'd seen a glimpse of relief in a battered head. Anyway, I thought I was getting some serious licks in until BT started up. He was quite literally taking the top halves of skulls clean off. Looked like a bunch of yarmulkes spinning up in the air after a particularly heavy gust. Travis had fought his way to a porch, some 50 feet to our left. It wasn't a mobile home, so that was something. He'd got the memo we were doing our best to make this a somewhat quiet affair, although cracking a head sounded a lot like smacking a 2x4 with a power hammer. It was fairly loud in its own right. Even with Ryan in his arms, Tommy was a death-dealing machine. His one-arm rifle thrusting was equally or more effective than my two-armed lunges. Zombies were congealing on our location. Normally, I would use the word converging, but they were a slimy, paste-coated sea of disgustingness. Tommy was kicking out and shattering knees and legs, incapacitating the ones getting too close. I nearly lost my grip and fell into a zombie as my hand slipped in the gore the rifle was coated in. It was a thrown shoulder from BT that kept me from going under. I let out a thanks, and he nodded to me. My sister and her son got to the porch first and were busy beating back the zombies that were trying to get them over the handrails. Maybe these were the early generation zombies, but they'd had their processing software updated. They saw where we were trying to go and were not only trying to get at us, but also trying to cut us off from that haven. Time for smashing skulls was diminishing rapidly, but the rub of it was we couldn't shoot either, because a bad shot, or one that sailed clear through, would come entirely too close to my son, sister, and nephew. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. How do you reconcile that? "Get in the house," I yelled to them. "We need to find somewhere else." "Mike, there is nowhere else," BT was straining. He was right. We were 20 feet from this one. The next nearest was 100. Or the moon, same distance, relatively speaking. "Get in and make sure the back door is open," I yelled to them. I heard a door slamming shut and was thankful that at least they were safe. Now I had to hope there was another door. The zombies were heaviest to our front. I jammed Gary's rifle back into his hands and had to spend an extra second or two to make sure he had the wits to hold on to it. "Sorry," I told him, as his hands were immersed in goo, better left undefined. I got my rifle into position and began to make a hole. The noise couldn't be helped, and if we didn't make it, who was going to give a shit if we made the cacophony or not? Plus, Ryan had taken this opportunity to let us all know what he thought of being jostled around on Tommy's back. He was crying out from the pain, and I had to think shock would be settling in soon enough. I caught a quick glance as Tommy was doing his martial arts routine. Ryan's ankle was flapping sickeningly across his broad chest. The boy's eyes were rolling around in his skull like loose marbles on a wooden floor. I was willing him to pass out again. For some reason, he just wouldn't. BT and I were the only ones firing, trying to keep everyone except Tommy in the middle of our very incomplete circle. BT almost immediately reverted back to clubbing the zombies. "I'm out," was all I needed to hear to know why. A window opened up to our side. Travis poked his head and rifle out and was doing his best to make us some room. My sister was on the top floor. She nearly pelted Travis with a rung from a handy rope-style fire escape ladder. You know, the kind you're only willing to risk your life climbing if your life is in peril. Kind of weird when you stop and think about it. Out of the frying pan and into the fire type scenario. Well, it sure wasn't like we weren't in danger, so ladder it was. The ladder passed by the first floor window, giving one a view of the living room as they scaled upward or hastily downward, as the case may be. "Toward the house!" I yelled. BT was still trying to make it around to the other side, where we didn't even know if there was an opening. Jesse had joined his mother, but he was firing down into the heads of zombies. We had the tiniest of openings. Nicole and Wesley pressed through into the ladder. If I harbored any question that my waif of a daughter could drag her injured leg and a baby up a flimsy swaying ladder, it disappeared as I watched her scale that thing like a monkey up a banana tree. Never doubt the resolve of a woman protecting her baby. She had a brief moment halfway up where the ladder moved off the house at an awkward angle. She was holding on by the tips of her fingers. My sister reached out and grabbed an arm, pulling her close. Jesse was holding on to his mother, who had not quite thought out the distances involved and almost pitched out herself. I wasn't sure how we were going to get Gary up because he still looked like counting to 10 might be a little beyond his capabilities. I think the only reason he hadn't dropped the rifle yet was that it was now basically glued to his hands. His coordination would have got him pulled over for a suspected DUI. If he couldn't walk a straight line, there was no way you could drive one. Tommy took care of that. He jumped up onto the ladder and basically forced Travis to take Ryan through the window. Then he wrapped an arm underneath Gary's left armpit and heaved him up. I don't think the ladder was designed for two adult males at the same time, but if it couldn't hold those two, then BT was in a lot of trouble. Gary wasn't completely dead weight, but close to it. He tried valiantly to get his feet on the individual steps, but was having a monumentally difficult time. Looked like he was trying to thread a needle with silk during a gale. Tommy just kept grunting and heaving until he was within the reach of help up top. "You next, BT!" I know he wanted to argue, but I still had bullets. Not many, but he didn't need to know that. He was halfway up when the well went dry. I thought about hopping on the ladder behind him, but the rope above him, bearing all the weight, looked like it was stretched as thin as it could get. "Dad, come on!" Travis urged through his window. It was a ground floor window, but the way the house sat on the landscaping, it was still a couple of feet above my outstretched hands. Jumping up was the only way to get to it. I looked like your prototypical middle-aged white man jumping, meaning I launched not at all. Of course, I'm planning to blame that on the kneecapped zombie that had grabbed my calf and ankle. My chin bounced off the side of the house. I was somewhat happy that it was aluminum siding, as it gave a little, but it was still a hard enough knock that I'd split my lip, I'm thinking busted my nose, and I was going to have a wallop of a knot on my forehead. And then, just to put a cherry on top, I slid the rest of the way down, grinding the side of my face against the concrete foundation. Going to have a serious case of raspberries. Rifle shots exploded all around me as those in the house began clearing out the riffraff that had gathered around me, waiting to do their version of a pig pile, or a pig-out pile might be a better name. The zombie that had crushed my dreams of pulling an Air Jordan was headless, yet I still had to pry his cold, dead hands from me. Must have been a die-hard NRA member. "Talbot, get your ass in the house!" BT shouted. He made it sound like I was 12 and I was out playing touch football after the streetlights came on. But the girl next door was still out, and I was in no mood to leave her behind to wash up and do my damn homework. Even in the dire straits I found myself in, I very much thought of flipping him a bird. Survival won out as I propped myself up against the house and began to scramble. There was no way I could get a running leap now. Travis was reaching down. And we locked hands. The kid was strong, no doubt about it, as the death grip he had on my wrist did not break, but I didn't think he had the leverage to pull me through. Bullets were whizzing by me, dangerously close. I mean, closer than they ever had from the enemy during a firefight. Knowing it was coming from loved ones didn't make it much less frightening. An inch one way or the other, and I was done for. Travis and I were in an agonizing equilibrium. I was basically stuck about a foot off the ground. I jerked on his leverage in an attempt to pull myself up,